atop Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hope you had a great weekend. We're back in action now. I know we've been following all these breakneck events when it comes to politics, when it comes to our economy, when it comes to what's happening overseas. Emily Schrader's going to be with us, joining us. We're joining us from Israel. She's a journalist there, human rights activist, and we could be looking at an attack over in that region. And, you know, Israel also knows what we know, that Iran's about to get a nuclear weapon. Is that okay? Suddenly, are we just going to ignore that? Weeks away, which means it could be now. Does anybody think that Iran is not that one nation on the planet outside North Korea that would actually do it and use it? Let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
We've had to wage a war on COVID. We won the war. Now we've got to move it. But we can't just raise taxes and stuff that doesn't really provide for productivity or, frankly, help manage the debt. And that's the concern people have. That'll be a political food fight of high order here for the next few months.
Brian Moynihan, one of the most powerful bankers in the world. What is the real state of the economy right now? High inflation, interest rates are real. And there are equally high worry, too, among the average Americans. We're going to go beyond the numbers into your living room next.
Number two.
The head of the snake sits in Tehran, and this administration has refused to take the actions that will impose risk on the leadership there in a way that would actually deter them. And so their response has been unserious. It has been naive.
Yeah, it has been both. No doubt about it. Mike Pompeo, the former Secretary of State, brace for attack. Israel expects Iran to send a hail of rockets and missiles their direction within hours. In the backdrop, new ceasefire talks in Qatar beginning on Thursday. Could we be seeing a war or could we be seeing peace break out? I know what I would like to see happen. We'll discuss it.
Number one.
And it is my promise to everyone here, when I am president, we will continue our fight for working families of America and eliminate taxes on tips for service and hospitality workers.
Excuse me? Really? That's your idea? You mean Donald Trump's idea? Nice try. Kamala Harris selling herself with Donald Trump's policies. Tough on the border. No taxes on tips. We'll fight inflation. What's next? Build the wall? Time for the Trump team to take this on or lose. And Kamala Harris going to get away with it. A lot of people say, yeah, I don't care if it's her idea. If it's his idea, I'm just going to use it. Or it's the first time they've heard it because they've shut off Donald Trump years ago. But here's what she said. I mean, you got to hear her talk about the border, and you will shortly. You have to hear her talk about the need to get inflation down. Does she know she's vice president now? If she's got a great idea, should she have told the president? Listen to this. This is the Donald Trump. Over and over again, starting as early June, he was at the way his story tells it. He's talking to a waiter who's waiting on his tables, and he said, you know, what if I eliminated taxes on your tips? Would that help? And they said, absolutely. And that became his policy. And remember, this is how it rolled out in June. Cut to.
When I get to office, we are going to not charge taxes on tips. There will be no taxes on tips. No taxes on tips. Vote Trump for no tax on tips. No taxes on tips. I also have no tax on tips. That's a big deal.
Are you going to make that an official line item in your economic plans?
Yes.
No tax on tips?
No tax on tips. Very simple.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's another reason why in the restaurant business you don't give minimum wage. Why? Because you get all the money in gratuities, but you're getting taxed. Really started in the Reagan administration that I remember, because I remember I have to bang it in to the computer before you leave. How much did you make in tips? You're never really honest about it, but you also put it in there. A lot of times you don't touch it. Now it's got Venmo. Now you get Venmo your tips, and now there's more of a record of it. So here's Kamala Harris stunningly over the weekend. Cut one.
And it is my promise to everyone here, when I am president, we will continue our fight for working families of America, including to raise the minimum wage and eliminate taxes on tips for service and hospitality workers.
And the crowd roars. Why wouldn't they? Because she stole another one of Donald Trump's policies. So if you look at Donald Trump's policies on oil and gas, 60% approval rating. When it comes up, not on Donald Trump, but on the policy itself, on the border, strong border policy, on not having a pathway to citizenship, stopping the sanctuary city, over 60%. So they don't believe this. I mean, Joe Biden doesn't believe you should be doing either one of those things. Taxes on tips, a big, very big upside. So he didn't do it. So Kamala Harris didn't urge him to do it. She doesn't want to do it. There's no track record of her doing that. She's from a sanctuary state. Did she complain when everyone who gets to go to California gets free education, free shelter, free room and board, free Medicaid? How Medicare, that's the only way to get universal health care for these people. That's what you basically get. You get free health care. That's why everyone's coming. Now she's supposed to be tough on the border because I prosecuted transnational gangs? Really? I mean, it's crazy what's going on. I just hope people understand that what she's saying she will do, she has no track record of doing, and she won't do. If you think it was easier to sell Joe Biden as being a moderate, hey, guys, I don't want to ban fracking. I don't want to stop drilling. You know me. But then when he got in there, he right now, all fracking, new leases, there's a pause. Also, he federalized all this land, making it impossible to drill. Number three, he also has so many regulations on this, it makes it almost impossible for these investors to get investors in banks to back up exploration when it comes to oil and gas, because he made it so tough and the downside so great. So here's Kamala Harris on some of her other policies, cut five.
There's no question I'm in favor of banning fracking. There's no question that we've got to critically re-examine ICE and its role and the way that it is being administered.
You support the Medicare for All bill, I think, initially co-sponsored by Senator Bernie Sanders. You're also a co-sponsor on it. I believe it will totally eliminate private insurance.
Let's eliminate all of that. Let's move on.
Do you believe in the mandatory buyback of, quote unquote, assault weapons?
Great question. Mm-hmm. I do believe that we need to do buybacks.
Mandatory buybacks, by the way. Don't want to cut her off early. And all this stuff would come out in interviews where she falls apart. But as James Carville said, and here's his quote, where is it written that you have to do sit-down interviews or a press interview? They've had to pick a they just had to pick a vice president, plan a convention, move around, do this, do that, and she's already agreed to a debate. So that's enough? You understand, it's not for me to become more famous or rich. Anytime somebody sits down with a political figure, it's to make your case to the people, to the voters, that you deserve, that they deserve your vote. Got it. It's not a favor. It's not beltway stuff. Don't let people insult you or lie to you and say that telling what they stand for is somehow a favor. So Charlemagne the God, a friend of our show, who is big into Vice President Harris, couldn't be more disappointed with the way she's acted as vice president, said she's being held back when he said sat down with us. Said he's being held back by President Biden. Now that Biden stepped aside, he weighed in on whether Harris should do interviews or not. Cut six.
So, I mean, why is that? I mean, she's new to the job, but it's striking that we really haven't seen her answer questions yet.
I really don't know. I mean, it's the bottom of the ninth inning, right? Like, I feel like she should be any and everywhere, you know, having these conversations. I truly don't know why she hasn't, you know, done any interviews yet, because that's the only reason Donald Trump is still, you know, sucking the air out of the headlines, because he keeps headlines going. Like, he's everywhere.
And I think Trump should be doing more rallies. This week he's going to be with Elon Musk tonight on Twitter Spaces or eSpaces, whatever they call it. Hopefully it's not going to get hacked. And I know Governor DeSantis had some problems when he did that on his rollout, but he bounced back. Only so far. Then on Wednesday he's going to be in North Carolina talking about the economy. It looks like he's going to have a rally on Saturday. And here's what else Charlemagne said, too. Cut seven.
You saw him at the National Association of Black Journalists Convention. You saw him on with Aiden Ross. He's going to be on with Elon Musk. He's always calling into conservative talk radio, which is one of my biggest issues with the Democratic Party. They don't use, they don't use the media that supports them the way that the right uses the media that supports them. Like, you know, for the last 4 years, you know, she's had plenty of platforms that she can be going on, from radio to podcast, right, that actually support her and, you know, support Democrats. But they haven't been doing that.
They don't do anything. They really don't do much. I mean, Joe Biden's trying to do obscured podcasts before he dropped out. Now he's trying to rationalize why he dropped out. And I'll get to that a little bit later. I also want to talk about the economy for real and keep your eye on the Middle East, because they have been so weak on Israel. Yes, they're almost, it's almost mandatory in America to support Israel. But the other things, it's pointing out this. Over the weekend, I don't know if you heard, but they blew up a school. And it looks like, wow, Israel just blew up a school for no reason. Everybody knows by now, if you care at all about that region, that Hamas, ISIS too, ISIS-K, they make their headquarters in mosques, schools, and hospitals. So you try to do surgical strikes in these places only to your own detriment after a while. You're losing soldier after soldier trying to take it on the ground. You find out that there are 20 high-ranking Hamas agents in this hospital. You take your shot. If I'm explaining it, I say I feel bad for every civilian who lost their life. However, blame Hamas. They're the one who perpetrated the unprovoked attack on October 7th. They killed many and even has kids as young as 5 years old in captivity for now 10 months. They're the ones who caused all this, but they could still be living in Gaza a lot better than everybody thought, taking the money from world bodies and building tunnels in order to fight one day and leave Palestinians susceptible to war while they hide underneath the ground free of charge. So that's what should be pointed out, but not Kamala Harris. She said it's up to Israel to avoid civilian casualties. I've been saying it over and over again. No, it's up to Hamas to make sure that civilians aren't in harm's way and that they fight like men, not hiding, cowering in tunnels around hostages, in my view. What about your view? 1-866-408-7669. Also talked to John Taffer over the weekend on One Nation. He gave us an idea of the real economy, how many food chains have and restaurant chains have gone belly up from Rubio's on down to Arby's. He gave us an idea, and a lot of it has to do with the raising of the minimum wage. You raise the wages so high, food gets so high, business stops. People should understand there's a breaking point with all this, but politicians who never work for a living don't understand it. They think it's compassion raising minimum wage. They're not thinking of the business owner without a margin of profit. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Obviously, I have a lot to say. So do you. Your chance next. Already got some emails over the weekend. I'll get to them. Don't move.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. The Fox News Rundown, a contrast of perspectives you won't hear anywhere else. Your daily dose of news twice a day, featuring insight from top newsmakers, reporters, and Fox News contributors. Listen and subscribe now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Trump seems to think that he's got a huge lead. I mean, you said it's at the press conference. You suggested it could be a landslide looking at polls. Do you tell him that you need to kind of, like, temper expectations?
I think President Trump is extremely confident. Look, I'm extremely confident. I think we're going to win. I also think that we have to work as hard as possible for the remainder of the election to try to persuade Americans to vote for us. That's the name of the game. But, yeah, look, do I think President Trump is actually as confident as he pretends to be in public? Yes, he actually is.
That is J.D. Vance, who was great yesterday. Although I don't love the whole attacking Tim Walz's service, it just seems to be a dead end with everything else going on. Plus, he's not John Kerry at the top of the ticket. But if he's going to keep running that he was in war and saying that, I think that he's scared to death of saying it anymore. So I would back off that a little bit. But that's subtlety. I think for the most part, he went and took on all three networks, adversarial networks. And I thought he did really well. He's very likable, knows his stuff, not going to get thrown. I was struck by how much nebulous, non-meaning, intramural things we talked about. I mean, he talked over and over again about what he said 3 years ago on a throwaway line on a podcast. It was a snarky move, but it's not a policy. Please understand that. So here's a little more about J.D. Vance. I'm going to get some calls in your emails. Here's J.D. Vance talking about Harris as a border czar. And, of course, Jonathan Carl thinks he knows everything. Cut 15.
Well, John, we have to start with the fact that we have a wide-open southern border because our border czar actually set a lot of open border policies. They suspended.
You know, she's not actually, she wasn't the border czar.
Oh, that was what the media called her. She assumed the title. She had control over a lot of our border policy at a time.
What was the root causes suspending of the migration?
Let me finish, John. The time they were suspending deportations,
yeah,
they stopped Donald Trump's remain in Mexico policy, and they reinstituted catch and release. They basically threw open the gates of our country, and now we have a ton of fentanyl, a ton of people
suffering.
But
how are you going to get 10 to 15 to 20 million people out of
the country? Well, the first thing you have to do is to stop the bleeding. Stop the open border. Get Kamala Harris out of there and actually re-implement the Remain in Mexico policy, rebuild or finish Donald Trump's border wall, and you do that and you stop the bleeding.
Right. It would help. I mean, how does she say, has she brought up the fact that the border wall is being sold pennies on the dollar and what's left of it just lays in the desert? Nobody even touches it. How would that, the U.S. Border Patrol, if they want that, they all want it. It's not the cure-all, but it helps funnel. It helps deter. That's what you need. We paid for it. We should be able to put it up. So what if some people write? John Hart writes me this. We know Trump has better policies than Kamala Harris. We know we will hire the best cabinet and the best 4,000 to 5,000 appointees and hold them to the highest performance standards. His press conference and rally should be 100% about these facts, 0% words like stupid, fat, and pig. 100% agree. I don't think she's stupid. I don't care what anybody thinks of her IQ. It doesn't matter. She's where she is. I don't care that she failed her bar the first time. All I know is I have no idea where she stands on anything, and what she said in the past scares me. And it was so unpopular, she melted down before the first caucus. J.D., you listen to WIBW over in Kansas. Hey, J.D.
Hey, good morning, Brian. How are you?
Good. What's on your mind?
Hey, I just like to say that I totally agree with you about this Hamas stuff. That they caused it. They're cowards for hiding under the ground. And speaking of cowards, first, I'd like Tim Walz, thank you for your service. However, you're a coward. And I bring that up for the simple fact that I'm a Desert Storm, Desert Shield veteran myself. And being the only son, and I had no children at the time, I was a sergeant training my guys. And they were not going to let me deploy because I was a sole surviving male. I raised hell with them and said, no, that ain't right. Well, they made me call my dad back here in Kansas and ask my dad for permission to go to war because I was bound and determined I was going to lead my soldiers. That is what a non-commissioned officer does. Mr. Walz, I think you're a coward. And with that being said, I would like to point out that I also have as many primary votes as Kamala Harris.
Absolutely. I hear you, J.D. It's amazing that they have circumvented the political system. I'm not saying the Constitution. Thanks for the call and thanks for your service. They have circumvented the political system in order to get her there. Now, I do think that Nancy Pelosi deserves all the blame and all whatever and all the praise, whatever you want, wherever you stand, for getting Joe Biden out. But she did not anticipate, in my view, from what I've said, what I've read, and from seeing hundreds of interviews, I don't think they anticipated Kamala Harris being anything other than one of the people vying for the spot. What Harris did with her team is consolidate the 500-plus delegates in order to get the nomination. Next thing you know, they're stuck with her. John Tester came out, desperately trying to look like a moderate Republican, came out and said, I will not go to the DNC, and I think it should have been an open process. So should a lot of other people. And Charlemagne the God said something over the weekend. He said, if they just listened to logic a year ago, they would have had a primary system. They would have challenged Joe Biden, had done this a year ago, and then people wouldn't be saying that they circumvented the system and democracy in order to jam her in there.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
You know, yet again, there are far too many civilians who have been killed. I mean, Israel has a right to go after the terrorists that are Hamas. But as I have said many, many times, they also have, I believe, an important responsibility to avoid civilian casualties.
Right. They have a special responsibility. As I mentioned earlier, it's not up to the IDF. They should worry about civilians all the time. We always did Iraq and Afghanistan with Syria, wherever we are. That's always been a priority. But you have to understand, if your leadership and the terrorists who want to kill us and kill them are going to hide in mosques, hospitals, and schools, sooner or later you're going to have to hit hospitals, schools, and mosques. And why can't she acknowledge that? Why doesn't Joe Biden ever acknowledge that? you know, there's casualties there, and I want to look into the details. But you have to understand, Hamas prides itself on headquartering in places they don't think that they'll be discovered or hit. So we have a choice. Let them live, and then let our people die again like they did October 7th, or take action. Emily Schrader is an Israeli journalist, human rights activist, and joins us now. Emily, welcome back.
Always happy to be here.
Emily, what do you think about some of the uproar over the weekend, what happened in Gaza?
I mean, I think it's incredibly frustrating, and you were spot on in what you just said, that it's frustrating that while we see support from Democrats and Republicans, we also see the Democrats continue to appease the more extremist factions of the left with this nonsense talk about how Israel must do more to avoid civilian casualties. And my question for them is this: what exactly do you want us to do additionally to avoid civilian casualties? Because Israel and the IDF from day one have been doing absolutely everything humanly possible to get civilians out of harm's way, to drop leaflets, to do roof knocking where we have a small strike on a building in order to warn civilians to get out of the area. And of course, this takes place after phone calls are made to civilians to evacuate the area. In addition to that, we've had soldiers on the ground risking their lives. I myself was in Gaza on one of these humanitarian aid missions where I witnessed thousands of Palestinians being safely evacuated from the areas they were in, the areas of the fighting, and they were surrounded on 360 degrees by IDF soldiers protecting them from who? From Hamas, who's the person that's actually, or the group that's actually threatening Palestinian lives. So you're exactly right when you say that the problem here is Hamas and the terrorist organizations who are supporting them and funding them, like the Islamic Republic. It's not the IDF doing this. And this controversy over schools and mosques, it's important to remember that under international law, those are legitimate targets in a war when they are being used for terrorist purposes, which is indisputable at this point. I mean, even UNRWA recognized last week that so many of their employees have been involved with this terrorist organization and have been using their facilities and materials to promote the terrorist organization Hamas.
It's unbelievable. So we had that bombing on August 10th. It looks like you got up to 20, maybe 18 to 20 members of Hamas. And Sinwar is now running. He's got the political faction and the military faction of Hamas. He's the guy in charge. And how could you possibly call an end to the fighting with him still alive?
Well, you can. I mean, I think that's the thing. And Israel is never going to agree to that. Sinwar has been at the top of the list before, and he certainly is now, and I don't think anything is going to change that. You mentioned the attack on the strike on the school. And it actually has just been updated in the last couple of hours. The IDF just released information that it was, in fact, 31 terrorists that were at that location. They released names and photos of all of these terrorists who were hiding out inside of the school, which, of course, is a cynical and disgusting abuse of civilian infrastructure in Gaza, but it's something we've seen since October 7th, so we can't really be surprised. But yeah, I think as more information comes out, we will see more and more proof that what the IDF was targeting was indeed terrorists who were hiding out in a civilian area, not, of course, civilians.
All right, a couple of things. First off, on Thursday's talks in Qatar, Hamas says, we're not sending anyone. So we want the deal that was put on play, I think he said July 2nd. We're not going to send anybody there. What are your thoughts on that? Why go then? William Burns is going to represent us. You guys are going to send a delegation. There'll be other Middle Eastern countries. But if Hamas is not going to go, aren't you wasting your time?
I think that there are other nations that do have the ability to pressure Hamas into agreeing to some sort of a deal. And so I do think it's still worth meeting, even if Hamas isn't going to send a faction. But Hamas not going at all, that really speaks to what their agenda is here. They're not interested in releasing hostages. They're not interested in a deal. They're interested in the destruction of the state of Israel. And that has been their explicitly stated goal since their inception. And so we can't expect that to change now. Now, can other actors force them to do something? Yes. But I will add to that that I don't have a lot of faith, because on October 8th, that should have been the universal demand of the international community with the Arab world leading. because the Arab world knows better than anybody what Hamas is doing to their own people. And I think that they have even more of a responsibility to speak out against it and say, you know what, this is not acceptable. This is not good for the future of the Palestinian people or maybe one day a state. And you, Hamas, are standing in the way of this, not Israel, not any other actor. It is Hamas and the terrorist groups supporting them, like the Islamic Republic, as I mentioned, that are standing in the way of that.
Well, I'll tell you, it's all Iran, because you have no problem with Egypt. You have no problem with Jordan. You have no problem with Qatar. You have no problem with UAE. You have no problem with Saudi Arabia. They're willing to have a detente. Everything was moving in the right direction. Iran wants to make sure it doesn't. And on top of that, you have Hezbollah, who has basically have 150,000 rockets pointed your direction. And it looks like Iran has given indications to our intelligence and yours that they're about ready to attack. Here's what your defense minister, Yoav Gallant, said. Cut 25.
We hear these messages coming from the direction of Iran and Hezbollah. Whoever harms us in a way that has not been done in the past is likely to be hit in a way that hasn't been done in the past. The IDF has significant capabilities.
So do you think the reports are correct that this new president of Iran is urging the Ayatollah to allow him not to hit back because he sees how vulnerable they are? Do you believe those reports have credibility?
It's entirely possible. It's also entirely possible that the entire conversation is psychological warfare. Iran, the regime in Iran, is known for this. So I wouldn't be the slightest bit surprised if the entire thing was made up. But the fact of the matter is, it doesn't actually matter. Pezeshkian, the new president, he's a puppet of the Islamic Republic in the first place. There's no such thing as a real election. He didn't actually win anything because it was predetermined from the start. And the reason why they wanted a president who is perceived falsely, but perceived as being slightly more moderate, is because they wanted to appeal to the West. They wanted to be appeased, as the Biden administration has done, in order to have sanction relief, in order to have their attention pulled away from their human rights atrocities and from their nuclear program, as the Democrats have continued to let them do. And so this is all part of the game of the Islamic Republic. I do think that we will see a strike. I think the intelligence reports are correct that it probably is going to be this week. But, you know, that it could go either way, as I mentioned. You don't really know with the Islamic Republic. They've been saying this for months already. So we don't know exactly what it's going to be, but I do anticipate that something will indeed happen, and most likely it will be directly from the Islamic Republic in addition to their terrorist proxies, meaning Hezbollah in Lebanon, the Houthis in Yemen, even Kataib Hezbollah in Iraq, and of course Hamas and Islamic Jihad. All of these organizations really are another arm of the Islamic Republic that has been waging this war against Israel. And that's why you see now a lot of Israeli officials coming out and saying explicitly that, unfortunately, this war is with the regime in Iran. It is not just with Hamas. It's much, much bigger. And as we've seen in recent days, the regime in Iran is very serious about attacking America as well. It was American targets, American bases that they've struck in the last few days through their proxies, both in Iraq, where they actually injured U.S. service personnel, and in Syria just a few days ago.
Looks like America has more assets in the area than even we had last time. Here's what Tom Cotton said about the political process and what he keeps hearing from Harris, which you heard when we first bumped in. Cut 28.
Just look back a couple of weeks ago when Prime Minister Netanyahu was in town. She refused to preside over the joint session, her only constitutional duty as president of the Senate. She refused to have a meeting in public with them, and she came out and again blamed Israel for the civilian casualties in Gaza, only emboldening Iran and Iranian-backed terrorists. And what did you have 2 days later? Hezbollah, another Iranian-backed terrorist, shot in rockets to Israel and blew up children playing ball at a playground. Kamala Harris is naive, and she's not prepared to be the commander-in-chief.
And I think her words are underestimated. In the region, it makes there seem to be a divide between U.S. and Israel. It gives these terrorists more hope. Am I overstating that?
Absolutely not. I mean, it's the unfortunate reality. I'm originally from California, and I know Kamala Harris for a very long time, and she is absolutely not fit to be president of the United States. This is a woman who's never actually been elected in the first place. She's incredibly naive on the Middle East. She has no idea what she's talking about. You can see even in the speeches she's given so far, it's just regurgitating talking points of the left, of some of her advisors, who in fact have been extremely problematic on this conflict to begin been with since October 7th, some of the individuals who are working with her. So I think there's a great reason for concern with that. There is a reason that, for example, the Islamic Republic is vehemently opposed to a second term for Donald Trump, and they're very silent when it comes to Kamala Harris. Now, I don't think Kamala Harris is actually against America or something quite that extreme, but her naivete, her ignorance when it comes to dealing with the Middle East is extremely dangerous, and it threatens American lives, and it's something beyond partisan politics. It's something that as every, you know, any American, regardless of their political affiliation, needs to consider, because we are at a critical point in world history, not just American, and we need a strong American leadership that is going to push back against these forces that threaten the United States of America.
You know, the thing is, Emily, this is my hope, as Emily Schrader is our guest, Israeli journalist, human rights activist, is that it really is so clear who the problem is. It's not the Middle East against Israel. Like when I grew up, when I was going to social studies class, and you hear how Egypt, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, they all want Israel out. They're all going to attack in the 73 war and the 67 war, and then the 1980s in Lebanon. It all comes down to Iran. Everybody else is willing to turn the page. They know Iran, Israel is not the problem. In fact, can be a huge asset with trade. They're not the problem. It is really one country financing these terrorist groups. They are, keep on making the Middle East tumultuous. They won't live in harmony. I get it. But it's really, if you could change the regime in Iran, you would have so much, the life would be so much better for millions of people.
I mean, I think it's not only that, it goes further. The Iranian people, in fact, are allies of the United States, and it's such a weird dichotomy because you see it a polar opposite of what you see in Gaza, where many Palestinians, a majority of them, actually support the terrorist organization Hamas, whereas the Iranian people are more than 80% against the Islamic Republic. So you actually have allies in the people. And the day after the Islamic Republic falls, you have unlimited opportunities, including economically, to expand trade with a massive market of 80 million people. So this is something that is definitely in the future for all of the Western world, and a reason, yet another reason, why any Western country, but especially the United States, which really is the leader of the free world and needs to stand up for that, should be leading the charge for regime change in Iran as well. I mean, we're not going to see peace in the Middle East until these terrorist organizations are shut down, and that's not going to happen until we see regime change in Iran. And one more thing I want to add about that that's important that a lot of Americans don't realize is that Khomeini, at the beginning of the Islamic Revolution, came from Lebanon, where he was working directly with Yasser Arafat, the founder of the Palestinian Liberation Organization, the PLO, which was a terrorist organization at the time. Now, they have had close ties from day one. In fact, on the day of the revolution, Palestinian terrorists were on the ground in Iran fighting with the Ayatollah and his people. So these ties between the Islamic Republic and their terrorist groups, their terrorist ideology, is something that in its core is part of the Palestinian leadership. And we cannot deal with both of those problems until we recognize it. It's really important to remember what these ties are.
So you're talking about the new one, Khomeini, as opposed to Ayatollah Khomeini, right? The new one, this guy.
I'm talking about the first one and the second one.
First one and the second
Both
one.
Both of them have close ties with the Palestinian leadership. We know they've given over $100 million to Hamas just in the last year. It's extremely problematic what we see happening, these ties between terrorist organizations. And you're right, it's really stemming from one place, and that's the regime in Iran.
Right, and just keep in mind, too, the Palestinians were kicked out of Jordan. They were kicked out of Lebanon. Then they ended up trying to take a piece of Israel, and they have not been they refused to accept. Their biggest moment was to accept the two-state solution under Clinton. Since that moment, we should not be talking about two-state solutions anymore. And believe it or not, Hillary Clinton gets it. She's one of the people that understands this because she knows she was in part of these negotiations with her husband, who was having some issues at the time. Emily, it's a fascinating time. We're all waiting to see what the next step is, and hopefully Israel's ready for it. Emily, thank you.
Thank you so much.
All right. Back with your calls, 1-866-408-7669. We also do want to talk about the economy, I promised. The real economy, not the numbers, but what's really going on.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
How do you want history to remember President Biden?
That he proved democracy could work. It got us out of a pandemic. It produced the single greatest economic recovery in American history. We're the most powerful economy in the world.
Really? Is this the same guy that's trying to pack the Supreme Court now? He's trying to totally reform the Supreme Court. And he was the one who was going to allow the filibuster to go by the boards. Is that democracy? If it wasn't for Sinema and Manchin to stand up? I just think that if Joe Biden wants to think that, go ahead. There's nobody who thinks we weren't coming out of the pandemic without it. We had a million shots in arms. Whatever you think of the vaccine, it was helping a lot of people who had underlying conditions and seniors. And number two is he put billions of dollars, trillions of dollars into the economy. Of course, when we came out of it, the variants got lighter and lighter. We were coming out of it. We weren't the only country to come out of it. We weren't the first country to come out of it. Why he takes credit for it when everyone was told to go home except unless you were essential personnel, and then some of them lost their jobs because the businesses went out. When the businesses came back and when the economy stood up and when the masks came off and when the vaccines went in arms, people went back to jobs. He's taking credit for those jobs. But the crazy thing is he was willing to run on that record and he was getting his butt kicked. And then he's forced out because he's too old, too shot, unable to do the job. Democrats finally admit it, and then the vice president, his vice president, decides to run on anything but what they've done for the last 3.5 years. If it was the greatest economy, if it was a revolutionary economy, don't you think that the vice president would be running on it? Don't you think he should be proud to talk about the border policy, proud to talk about our foreign policy? Is she proud to talk about anything? So far, we got a few speeches, and she's referring back to her times as a AG. In California, where she said she was tough on crime, really? To fund the police person who looks to bail out people in Minneapolis after the George Floyd riots? Law enforcement families know the difference. Hispanic families know the difference. The oil and gas families know the difference. You cannot believe her, what she's saying now. You have to see what she's done and what she said in the past. Until she tries to explain herself.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. Proud to come to you from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan. Heard around the country, around the world. Great Olympics just wrapped up. It's going to be here. I'm actually reinvigorated for the Olympics. I just love seeing athletes who never get any credit get credit. And they work just as hard as the high revenue sports. I'm not just talking about, obviously it's great to see the gymnasts do it, but they always get the glory. But when I see team handball, I don't even know, it might be another country that wins it. I just love that moment. What I feel terrible about is we don't know the boxers. They put it on pay-per-view behind a paywall, the boxing element. The only thing we know about it is two men who pretend to be women won gold medals in the women's division. But we're going to have Michael Goodwin in a matter of moments. And we're going to have Michael Allen, former special assistant to the president and senior director of National Security Council. He's going to be joining us about the challenges we're facing overseas. Let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's big three.
Number three.
We've had a wage of war on COVID. We won the war. Now we've got to move it. But we can't just raise taxes and stuff that doesn't really provide for productivity or, frankly, help manage the debt. And that's a concern people have. That'll be a political food fight of high order here for the next few months.
That is so true. Brian Moynihan of Bank of America, the president. What is the real state of the U.S. economy? High inflation, high interest rate equal high worry. We go beyond the numbers.
Number two.
The head of the snake sits in Tehran. And this administration has refused to take the actions that will impose risk on the leadership there in a way that would actually deter them. And so their response has been unserious. It has been naive.
Yep, that is so true, Mike Pompeo. Brace for attack. Israel expects Iran to send a hail of rockets and missiles in their direction within 24 hours. In the backdrop, new ceasefire talks on Thursday in Qatar. Could we be seeing war or peace breakout? Let's find out.
Number one.
And it is my promise to everyone here, when I am president, we will continue our fight for working families of America and eliminate taxes on tips for service and hospitality workers.
Hospitality. Interesting. Nice try, Kamala Harris. Is selling herself now as Donald Trump's. Really? Using his policies. No joke. Tough on the border. No taxes on tips. We'll fight inflation day one. What's next? You got to build a wall? Time for the Trump team to take this on or lose. Michael Goodwin knows all about it. He wrote about it over the weekend. The title of his column was "The Liberal Media Will Do Anything to Get Harris Elected," which includes not questioning her. Michael, welcome back. I wish you were wrong, but I think you might be right.
Thank you, Brian. Yes, it is one of those cases where I'm not happy to be right, because I do believe this is sort of the ultimate betrayal of the responsibility of journalists, which is to question the candidates, to vet them in a way that will help voters decide. But when the candidates take a vow basically not to vet one party's candidate, or when the media takes a vow not to vet one party's candidate, and they all act in unison, then the country, I think, has no real basis of knowledge. Now, that doesn't mean people can't make up their own minds, can't do their own research. I mean, because of social media largely, because of the ability to tap into media sources everywhere, most of the information is out there somewhere. You just have to dig harder for it, and you have to reject this kind of spoon-fed idea that she's got all these ideas. Well, I mean, basically, then why doesn't she put them in place now? The last time I looked, she's still the vice president. Has she said to Joe Biden, you know, I think we ought to do something about the tips, the taxes on tips? Has she said, you know, Joe, we've got to strengthen the border if I'm going to convince people. You know, Joe, we have to do something about inflation before it's too late. No, none of that has happened. And there's no questions to her about that. You even have the Associated Press, which has gone so woke it doesn't know which end is up, saying, you know, those interviews aren't what they used to be. So they're giving her a pass on ignoring the media. That essentially is the essence of the column, which is that they see their job not as vetting her, but as electing her.
Michael, in my lifetime, I've never met anybody who wants to pursue any type of occupation in newspapers, radio, TV, anything, that doesn't want to question newsmakers, big or small. I don't care if it's a town councilman. He wants to find out, you know, what's going on with cleaning up the local lake, whatever it is. You want to question the people. I've never heard anyone say, well, you know, he's a friend of mine. I don't want to question him. You know, I don't care who you are. You want to question him. Johnny Carson wants to interview celebrities and newsmakers. Who would, if you went up to Carson, do you think he would have ever said, I don't want to question them? It's not my job to question them. Or people are saying this on other channels. They're saying, you know, that's inside the beltway, this whole need to do interviews. That's not what people want. Of course it's what people want. People want to know fundamentally what you're going to do if you're president. Right now, they have no idea. But this is what blew me away over the weekend. This brought it to a new level. Cut one.
And it is my promise to everyone here, when I am president, we will continue our fight for working families of America, including to raise the minimum wage and eliminate taxes on tips for service and hospitality workers.
This is the biggest insult, because now she says, as a AG, I was prosecuting transnational gangs at the border. She's tough on the border. We got to get border security. Now she's going to fight inflation day one. And then she takes a policy that Trump came up with in June and adopted it as her own in August, and expects us not to know that at the RNC and at the last appearance, Trump said the same thing in every speech. Now, how do they expect to pull this off?
Well, Brian, I think that obviously Trump said it in Nevada, and it was aimed at, you know, mostly casino workers and others, which is a heavily unionized state, and it was a big hit. Now, what's interesting, he also said, Trump, that he would stop the tax on senior citizens, the Social Security, stop taxing them for Social Security once they were on Social Security. And the New York Times denounced these programs as, excuse me, as driving up the deficit. So when Kamala Harris adopts these programs, as she probably will with everything that he does that looks popular, will the New York Times denounce her too? Of course not. The New York Times didn't care about the deficit during Joe Biden's spending sprees that drove up inflation. But now that Donald Trump has an idea, oh my God, it's terrible. But now that Kamala Harris has adopted it, let's see if it's still terrible or if it's one of those things that deserves further consideration. I mean, everything is crooked. Everything about the media is crooked. And it is an astounding thing to say that, Brian. I mean, you and I have discussed our doubts about the FBI.
This is the new low. This is the new low. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, it just, where is the bottom? There seems to be no bottom that they will bend and stoop and beg to just elect a Democrat and, more specifically, keep Donald Trump out of the Oval Office. They hate nobody as much as they hate Donald Trump.
Well, I want you to hear, I want to read you what the Wall Street Journal editorial board said, asking the question of Donald Trump. He goes, question now, if Donald Trump is, in their words, going to blow another election, they say he doesn't seem to realize he's now in a close race that requires discipline and a consistent message. His struggles are hurting the GOP candidates from the House to the Senate. This is still Trump's election to lose, but it is, as we learned in 2020, he's more than capable of doing it. It is, they're calling him out. You got to get better. You got to stop talking about how dumb she is. It doesn't matter. You got to stop saying crazy. You got to stop bringing up that she failed the bar the first time. It doesn't matter. What you have to just point out is the issues. The issues are on his side. All the facts are on his side. He's got the team now. You can't say they're a bunch of newbies who are jealous of each other, stabbing each other in the back like 2016. He's got everything together now. It's still his to win. Do you worry that he's so angry that Biden's not in that he can't turn the page?
Oh, absolutely. Look, I generally agree with that editorial. I mean, I'm not sure 2020 is the right example because of COVID and everything. But I do believe he is blowing it. You know, Brian, I'm struck. I interviewed him the day after the assassination attempt on the way to the Milwaukee convention. And he was very much a different person. Of course, he was shaken. We together watched the video of him getting shot, and it was extraordinary to see the kind of shock on his face. So he talked about a different message, that he had torn up his convention speech. It was good, but it was too hard. And I just wonder, where is that Donald Trump now? He seems to have receded into like the 2016 primaries where everybody had a nickname and he destroyed them, you know, low energy Jeb and all of that. It worked. It worked at a time. Here we are nine years later. It doesn't work anymore. She's a different candidate, a different opponent.
Right.
And he seems stuck in the past. And He is capable of blowing it. I mean, you know, a reader wrote to me recently and said, you know, I'm really for him, but if he blows this election, he's going to go to jail and I don't care anymore. I mean, I think that's the kind of anger he's creating in his own voters by letting this thing slip away, by giving voice to his grievances, his anger, his sense of who knows what. But the stakes are so high. I mean, all the things we're talking about, Mike Pompeo, before we came on, talking about Iran, all of these things matter so much that if he is going to give in to grievance, he doesn't deserve to win. And this country is going to pay a heavy price under a Kamala Harris administration.
You know, you bringing that up is what a conversation comes to me all the time, is that in the beginning, in 2016 and 2020, it was, I love Donald Trump. Now it's, if Donald Trump loses, we lose as a country. If it was moderate against moderate, You know, I would be like, you know what? If you're a Republican, you want the Republican to win, Democrat to win, center left to center right. It's not that big of a deal. But now someone's pretending to be a moderate to right who's way to the left. And we just watched a guy pretend to be moderate and govern way to the left. We're at $37 trillion in debt. We're being run over internationally. Our Defense Department is withering. Recruiting is down. Spending is up. These new green deals are just folly. We have suspended oil and gas leases. This is getting to the fundamentals of our country. So it's really bigger than President Trump. And I think that he also knows that he should know this. Got to be reminded, even though he's got some legal victories, that's not going to last. After he's done, he's going to run out of revenue to pay his legal bills, and they're going to go for the kill. And they're going to go to put him in jail. They're not going to care that he's 79.
No, no. And look, if he loses his second consecutive election, that will be a historic marker. I mean, he will have been one of the great losers in American political history. There's so much riding on that. I mean, even if you just want to reduce it to ego and to legacy, that will be his legacy, that he blew an election against her. And now we're going to have a California progressive setting national policy. And as you mentioned earlier, the House and Senate will go with it. I mean, if he blows this election, I think the Republicans are going to be in the minority in Congress in both houses.
You're going to have two more states. You're going to have two more states. And the Supreme Court's going to be full of 40-year-old Supreme Court justices. And it's going to be about four seats bigger. So Clarence Thomas is going to retire. And guess who's going to be naming him? The replacement will be named by Kamala Harris.
That's right. And as you say, they'll expand the court. They'll end the filibuster in the Senate. And so there will be nothing that the Republicans can do about it. I mean, this is, you know, Brian, I've said before that there are, if you took the average Democrat and the average Republican 20 years ago, they were both fairly close to the center. Now the parties have gone in opposite directions. And so the average Republican and the average Democrat are very far apart from each other on a whole host of issues. If Kamala Harris becomes she's one of those far left people. If she takes over the government, the whole government is going to shift left, far left.
You're not overstating. People listening right now should know that you voted for Barack Obama. You used to write for the New York Times. You're reporting, writing columns on opinion. This is not, you're not fear mongering. You're not warning people, trying to do scare tactics. I think you're stating fact, Michael. Final thought. This is not,
look,
it's beyond opinion.
I mean, I'm older than 21, which is to say I've been around a while. I've seen these things. And we are in uncharted territory in terms of how our politics have become so divided. And I wish we were more united. I wish the center could hold. But right now we're having a battle. I think Trump is trying to moderate, say, in terms of abortion and other things. But essentially it is left versus right. But the left is much further to the left than the right has gone to the right. And now one of them wants to be president and is leading in the contest. I mean, that's what's at stake here. I don't hate all Democrats. I don't even hate all progressives. But you cannot let them have the entire power apparatus.
And that's all happened. Michael Goodwin, always great. New York Post, Michael Goodwin, thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you, Brian.
All right, your call's next. Then Michael Allen, we bring you the latest. What's happening over in Israel. Don't move. And the penetration into Russia by Ukraine.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I don't know why people didn't see this coming. That was the other frustrating thing. I'm glad that, you know, they have a lot of energy in the party now, but they could have done this a year ago. And they could have avoided all of the backlash they're receiving now where people are saying, oh, there was no primary. The people didn't decide this. This was a coup that the party did. It's like, yo, you could have avoided this a year ago because we all saw this way back when.
And that was Showman the God making a lot of sense on ABC. Look, he likes Kamala Harris. He campaigned for her when she was running for president before it all fell apart prior to Iowa. That's no problem with that. You don't have to agree with everyone in order to like them. I really like the guy a lot. He's extremely talented and insightful and intuitive. The other thing he said is whatever happens, Joe Biden should never debate Donald Trump. He will destroy him. He said that a year ago. Was he right? Everybody knows he was right. And what he just said now is he was watching the diminishing Joe Biden before our eyes. The only thing is he's a Democrat who admitted it, who said what we were saying. And say, well, my God, this guy's terrible. He can't speak. He can't do anything. He barely works. And he's a Democrat. Because people just chose to ignore him, not to go on his show. And now he's 100% right, too, about people look at the process of picking Kamala Harris and say, they circumvented democracy. Kinda. He's right again.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
You'll remember in the opening days after October 7th, they were saying there's no evidence that Iran is linked to this. When Hezbollah fired their missiles, there was no evidence that Iran was linked to this. When the Houthis fired missiles on commercial vessels, when there were rockets fired that injured Americans just the last couple weeks ago, and they talk about Iraqi militias. The head of the snake sits in Tehran. And this administration has refused to take the actions that will impose risk on the leadership there in a way that would actually deter them. And so their response has been unserious. It has been naive.
That is the former Secretary of State and CIA Director, Mike Pompeo. Do you have any doubt that he's 100% right? Michael Allen's a former Special Assistant to the President and Senior Director of the National Security Council. Michael, all they keep talking about is ceasefire. No one ever talks about Israel making sure that they're safer the next day. And leaving Hamas in power, Sinwar alive, would just postpone the next October 7th.
You're exactly right. It's as if October 7th didn't happen for many of these commentators across the world. They immediately pivoted right after October 7th to blame shifting to Israel and trying to get them to stop prosecuting a war against the very people who had just slaughtered them. So it really speaks to their motivation, and it ought to cause us to discount what they say today when Israel's trying to protect itself against Hezbollah in the north.
Right. So they think an attack could come within 24 hours, and judging by the weaponry that we're moving to the area, including a nuclear sub, we think so, too. Just judging by actions, and Gallant has met with Austin again. They've had a few conferences. So I get this reminds me of when the 300 missiles and rockets came raining down from Iran. What are you reading between the lines?
So there's been more of a delay this time, but I think it's just what you just said, which is that last time in April, Iran was unsuccessful. They didn't land a punch. The United States and Israel and our allies successfully brought down the ballistic missiles and other projectiles that were sent toward Israel. And so Iran's thinking to itself, I can't look weak again. I need to think of the right formation of drones, ballistic missiles, and cruise missiles that might actually penetrate Israeli airspace and land somewhere. Or else Iran just looks totally feckless and will certainly look weaker when Israel takes another shot back at them if they take a shot at Israel. And Israel, of course, will be able to land its punch because it has superior technology.
How freaked out are they, Michael Allen, about the assassinations of these Hezbollah and Hamas leaders in Lebanon, Gaza, and Tehran? What do you think there's – I mean, I hear internally in Lebanon they're blaming each other because they had to give – someone had to give them up to find out the location of that commander who's – role dates back to the 1980s, and then they just killed another Hamas leader in Lebanon over the weekend, and of course the assassination of Haniyeh in Tehran. What is it? What are they thinking? What have Israel's enemies thinking right now?
They're thinking that the Mossad, Israel's intelligence agency, has agents everywhere, that they can't trust anyone, and they must be completely worried about the efficacy of any actions going forward. Think of it. The Blair House, not far from where I am, is where foreign leaders stay when they come to visit the president of the United States. Essentially, what Israel was able to do was to recruit the Secret Service to lay a bomb underneath the bed of a visiting leader at the Blair House. Think of it. That's what Israel was able to pull off when they killed the Hamas leader who was staying at the guest house in Tehran of the Iran Revolutionary Guard Corps. It's shocking what they're able to pull off. They have enormous risk-taking appetites, and so they got to be freaked out in Tehran about what Israel is willing to do to them.
So what's the point of, and you want to educate me on this, I just don't see it. What's the point of this ceasefire meeting on Thursday in Qatar? Hamas is not sending anyone. They said, hey, go back to the July agreement. If you sign up on that, I'll sign up for it. So Israel sent a contingent. William Burns, the CIA director, is going. They're going to have various Arab leaders there. But Hamas is not going. What's the point?
I think the Biden administration is flailing. They believe that they need to get this ceasefire in place and a hostage release before Biden leaves office. But they cannot put it all together because they don't understand the nature of deterrence. They do not understand that if Israel were able to put more pressure on Iran and Hamas, then they might be willing to come to the negotiations because they would feel insecure about their standing in the future. Instead, when all Biden and Kamala Harris do is criticize our ally Israel, Hamas makes the calculation that, you know what, we might as well just hold out here because the world is going our way. Our enemy Israel can't even get support from the United States, its best friend. So why would we go negotiate with these folks? Let's leave Israel on the griddle.
I want you to attend Senator Tom Cotton said something very similar. And knowing, too, in a week, these prepared Hamas, pro-Hamas demonstrations outside the DNC in Chicago. Cut 29.
Look at what's happened just in the past few days at her rally. She's been interrupted twice by pro-Hamas radicals. The first time, she accused them of helping Donald Trump get elected, not telling them they were demented for supporting terrorists, not telling them that the United States stands with Israel, the victim of the worst slaughter of Jews since the Holocaust, but that they might help Donald Trump get elected. Apparently, though, that was too tough even for her and her campaign, because when she was interrupted next, she literally had a script in front of her. She had a piece of paper that she started reading from in which she sympathized with these pro-Hamas radicals. She said, I hear you. I hear your voice. We need a ceasefire immediately. Rather than saying that we need a ceasefire immediately, she should have been saying, like Joe Biden should have said from the beginning, we need an Israeli victory immediately.
Right. And that would have been a message that would help in the battlefield. I don't think in a million years she'll be any better, if not worse, for Israel if she's president.
Much worse for Israel. You can just feel it when she talks. She has disgust for Israel, certainly for Prime Minister Netanyahu, and I think we ought to be worried about really leaving one of our top allies in the world out by themselves if Harris were elected president. I think she has it out for them. I think Kamala Harris is focused more on trying to win the battleground state of Michigan than she is on anything else in the world, including the importance of supporting our ally Israel in the middle of a war against terrorists. And that's what's dangerous about her, and that's what would be catastrophic about a Kamala Harris presidency.
So if I can switch and go to Ukraine, Michael Allen, for this, I'm amazed they went into Kursk with 1,000 guys. They've stayed 300 miles into Russia for the first time. We seem ambivalent, relatively confused by Ukraine's success. I love this. Now Russia quickly has to go get reinforcements, maybe pull them off the front line or conscript more reluctant warriors to get in there. What does this do? How does this change, if at all, anything in this long-running fight?
Well, first of all, it's just great to see Ukraine mixing it up a little bit. They have been in an incremental, almost stalemate type of situation with the Russians for some time. And it's good to see a little ingenuity from them. to break through these lines and to plunge deeply into Russia. Two, I think it helps with Ukrainian morale. I think their morale is high, but this is just sending it skyrocketing because they're taking the fight to the Russians. And third, what I think is terrific about it is that it might have actual battlefield effects. If the Russians have to pull troops off of the front line to run backwards, in effect, into their own territory to try and sink the Ukrainian offensive, that might give the Ukrainians other opportunities in the Donbas and elsewhere. So I think it's a great move. I'm not sure what the total end game here is yet. The way the analysis I heard is like a chess game. What Ukraine does next will depend on what Russia does next, but it's exciting, and I'm so glad they're shaking it up and making real battlefield effects. As we go through the summer.
Yeah, the way I understand it, it's now six straight days they've been there. They're basically camping out. And what Ukrainians don't do is they don't pillage people. They don't kill civilians. They will take it. They'll move through. But they don't torture. The Russians torture and they kill. They assassinate. Their goal is civilians in order to break the will of the country. According to the Pulse, now I don't really know the science behind the Ukrainian Pulse. But it looks like the Ukrainian people still do not want to give up any land for peace. It astounds me.
It's amazing. The Ukrainians, I think, are in this. They believe that Crimea is their territory. They feel like if they did some sort of arrangement or ceasefire with the Russians, they feel like they're passing along a war to their children or their grandchildren because they know that Putin would come back at them once he had a chance to rearm. So I think that's their attitude. You know, you and I have spoken about this before. The Biden administration has been unfortunately weak and obsessed with escalation for years now. They're the ones that have held the Ukrainians back. They give them arms, but they don't give them the right arms that they need when they need them, and they have delayed it, and the Ukrainians are still in the fight. But if Biden had been tougher all along, we wouldn't be 3 years into this. But nonetheless, the Ukrainians are still on their feet and fighting the Russians, and it's good for the United States to have our second greatest adversary really having their military degraded for years now.
A fascinating time, Michael. It just goes to show you really, if anytime you back this administration, they make you pay the price by slow walking weapons and make you question their tactics. If their objective is the same, their tactics make you pay the price for supporting them. Michael, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Yep. Former special assistant to the president, senior director of the National Security Council. So when we come back, we'll take some calls and find out if there's a need to know more.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. More to know. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen is the most recommended memory support brand by pharmacists.
It's an amazing feeling to watch them up on the stage and then to see the flag going up to the rafters, hearing the national anthem. I don't know that I've ever been more proud to be American, to be part of a group of people that accomplished something special. It was really a beautiful evening.
Wasn't easy either. Steve Kerr and his U.S. national team, men's national team, you know, he's coach of Golden State, former Chicago Bull, talking about winning a gold medal. And now that we're doing more to know, we got 40 overall, including the men's team beat France. Going to be even tougher next time. Remember, next Olympics going to be in L.A. There's going to be no Durant, no LeBron James. I think Steph Curry will still be out there. And we'll see what happens. The rest of the world is catching up, but it makes it fun. Nothing's better than the first dream team. 126 medals, pretty incredible. China had 40 gold like us, but we had 44 silver, 42 bronze. Japan was third with 45. Australia was third with 53. And Japan was fourth with 45. No, excuse me, France had 64. So this is even in order. What's going on here? You trying to throw me off, Pete?
I am definitely trying to throw you
off. I mean, did you see what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
I'm
but, at the total. But if you look at it, it's going based on gold medals.
Oh, come on. Yeah. You have to, if you're not in first, you lose? I mean, come on.
Well, no,
what kind
the
of attitude is that?
If it's gold medals and the tiebreaker would be total medals.
Okay. Steph Curry had a great time, and he won it all. Tom Cruise dove in from the top of the stadium into the Paris Olympics and hopped on a motorcycle, Mission Impossible style. You know, he rappelled all that way. Is it rappelled? Ziplined. I would say he ziplined all the way down. Almost nobody I know would have the courage to do that. That's not a stunt man, but he does his own stunts. Then he hopped on a motorcycle, and then it seemed as though he ended up in Los Angeles. But evidently, he taped it in March. I think it was pretty cool. He was there. He was watching the women's soccer team win, which is pretty astounding. The women's soccer team got knocked out in the quarterfinals. They were a mess. Megan Rapinoe, Alex Morgan, all gone. They thought, okay, what a waste of a generation. It's going to rebuild. They have a brand new coach in June, and they win it all. And they beat Brazil in the end. And nobody cares except me. I'm looking at Eric and looking at Pete. They're just staring right back at me. All right, how about the controversy in the Olympics? You want to give me a swish? Jordan Chiles is a rarity in Olympic history. She had her gold medal, her bronze medal taken away, and it has nothing to do with doping. What happens is difficulty in gymnastics gets a certain rating as well as the actual routine. When they did the math, they realized the difficulty that she registered for her floor routine was higher than it was given. So long story short, the judges screwed up. She came in third. Well, then they go back and they say, when you get your score, you have 1 minute to protest. So they said, the Romanian said, she came back after 1 minute. She might have been right in her protest, but she missed the deadline of 1 minute. Therefore, the Olympic Committee says, you're right, Romania, you win this. But in retrospect, they looked at the tape. They approached the desk at 47 seconds, meaning she should keep it. As of right now, they took it away. But remember, Holyfield got the bronze when they said he hit a guy after the bell when he didn't. And he got more publicity because he got screwed in the bronze in the semifinals than he did having won it. And he'd end up being pretty good. What else can I tell you? Next, Elon Musk has filed an antitrust lawsuit against an advertising coalition called Global Alliance for Responsibility Media. This is a despicable organization. It accuses GARM, that's their acronym name, of colluding with brands to boycott X, which is Twitter, and collectively withhold billions of dollars in advertising revenue. GARM encouraged advertisers to avoid X after Musk took over the company, concerned about racist content. 18 GARM members stopped advertising on the platform, and dozens of others reduced their spending by 70% or more, said the filing. Now they're asking for a jury trial. Quote, we tried being nice for 2 years and got nothing but empty words, posted Musk. Now it is war. I agree. These whole organized boycotts, because you think you know better than the product, you're going to boycott the product if they're on a platform. Let's say you don't like ESPN or you don't like Fox, you don't like USA Network. You're going to get a coalition to threaten products not to advertise on certain mediums. Musk got to win. Next, Charles Barkley isn't going anywhere, despite Barkley saying, I'm retiring after 1 year in June. Now, we love Barkley. We know he's a great player, too. Quote, I love my TNT sports family. Barkley said, my number one priority has been and always will be our people and keeping everyone together for as long as possible. We have the most amazing people, and we are the best at what we do. I'm looking forward to continuing to work with them, both on shows we currently have and new ones we develop in the future. This is the only place for me, I have to say, I've been impressed by the leadership team who is fighting hard and have been aggressive in adding new properties to TNT Sports, which I'm excited about. I appreciate them and all my colleagues. I'm going to stick around. I'm going to give them my all as we keep them entertained for years to come. So I guess it means he's coming out to do things other than basketball. Am I to assume that?
Yeah, I mean, he has been popping up on other sports. I think hockey, as a matter of fact, he was popping up on some of the pre- and post-game shows
We don't care what Barkley says about hockey.
You don't find it interesting for an elite athlete just to comment on
not
another
every
sport?
Day. I mean, once in a while.
No, I don't see him being Barkley's like the guy that's going to be in studio every single game, but occasionally.
Right. You can't keep him employed like that. Put it this way. They should take that whole team and bring it. Where's it going now? To Amazon? Who lost it?
I don't know who lost it, but obviously TNT lost the NBA.
All right. Next, what could I tell you? Oh, no time. It was about screen time. We should keep to 3 hours of screen time for kids. It can have a positive effect on behavior. They have a whole breakdown. Babies up 18 months. Should limit screen time? I think that goes without saying. 18 to 24 months, educational program only. And 2 to 5, 1 hour per weekday, 3 hours on weekends. And they say the benefits will be great. That's why I believe the early settlers were the smartest. No TV.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Thanks so much for being here, everybody. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hope you had a fantastic weekend. I'm sure you did. I'm not ready to turn the page on the summer, but so many people are going back to school, especially in Florida. Got back to college. As you're in sports, you're probably back for a couple of weeks. Division One, Division Two, and Division Three goes back this week. So there's a lot going on in your life. I appreciate it, but there is so much going on, unprecedented in the world of politics, big time. I mean, we just watched something happen with the throwing out of Joe Biden, who's been in politics 50 years, by somebody who's been in longer, and that's Nancy Pelosi. You know, Nancy Pelosi's 84 years old, thoroughly responsible, not only, but thoroughly of leading the ouster of Joe Biden about a year too late. Actually, 3 years, never should have been nominated. If it wasn't a pandemic, he never would have won the election. But there were so many unacceptable people like Kamala Harris running, they had to pick out someone who could pretend to be moderate. So now we had a situation where President Trump, who was marshaling the biggest comeback in political history from where we were in 2020 to where he was in 2022 in the midterms, a lot of his people lost, to coming all the way back to 24, getting the nomination, and then leading Joe Biden in almost every state. He was en route to maybe taking 40 states. And now we have Kamala Harris come in. And remember, I don't have short-term memory loss. She was the biggest laughing stock of vice presidential history, including what they made a mockery of Dan Quayle, most of it unjust. But she, in her word salads, has gone out of her way every time unscripted to make herself look worse and worse, whether it was in Poland, refusing to answer a question about where the F-16s were, whether it was trying to explain what space was to little kids who were hired as actors, to people asking to describe Ukraine. She describes a state smaller, a country smaller than Russia, to all these things, to being looking at Veep, not really realizing that it's a mockery of the vice presidency, showing someone so incompetent. She says she's actually a fan of it. She was going to go to the dustbin of history, just disappear from the fray. And now she's leading in some polls and at the very least tightened everything up to the degree where I think the Trump campaign is thrown. What has really thrown them and thrown me is that Kamala Harris, realizing that her administration, that she's the second in charge for 3.5 years, has led unpopular policies at the border, unpopular policies with the economy, terrible foreign policy, terrible policy on immigration and inflation. Transitory, not close, still around, absolutely. So she decided to adopt that she's suddenly tough on the border, say that she's going to fight inflation if she becomes president only, and then this, cut one.
And it is my promise to everyone here, when I am president, we will continue our fight for working families of America, including to raise the minimum wage and eliminate taxes on tips for service and hospitality workers.
Exactly. She has adopted the Trump policies. Everything that she's doing, Trump is doing because it's what he always ran on. He always believed. She's doing it because what he's running on and what he's doing is popular. That's what got the big crowds. He was talking for the people. He wasn't talking out of the conservative playbook. He wasn't talking about free trade. And at first, I was reluctant. I said, well, free trade stops wars. It equals the playing field, gets us cheaper goods. But what it did is hollowed out our manufacturing. Trump realized that. Suddenly, Biden was late to it. Now she's adopting it. So people should at least understand what she's doing. Can't mean any of it. And this is why it's important for you to pay attention and educate people. If you want more of the Biden years, vote for Kamala Harris, only she's going to be more to the left. If you want back to the Trump years, vote for Trump. She's pretending that she's going to govern like Trump. She can't. She doesn't understand it. She does belong the cover of the New York Post today, chameleon. She's doing things she thinks will be popular that fundamentally different than anything she ever spoke about. Please raise your standards. She doesn't do any interviews. They're also having some problems because they're trying to merge Kamala Harris people with the Biden people, and they hated each other. They have very respect for each other. And the person that was running the campaign manager Julia Chavez Rodriguez, Now, she's been around with Kamala from day one. She's running the Biden campaign, but they really have no use for her, it seems, with the new Harris campaign. So now they're telling her, hey, why don't you focus on the Sun Belt states? She's like, really? I think I'm running these things. Then Jen O'Malley Dillon, the former Biden White House official and campaign chairman, told Harris in a phone call that she needed specific assurances that some of the campaign's new power players, including David Plouffe, Barack Obama's former campaign manager, will not dilute her decision making. This reminds me, who was the worst runner of her campaign? Kamala Harris. She could not, she had tons of money. She had the name recognition. She fell apart because her staff hated her and they hated each other. And what happened since she became vice president? Her staff has resigned in mass. 87% that started have left. These are the things that Trump should be pointing out, nothing else. The guy that's doing the fighting, ladies and gentlemen, is the vice presidential nominee. And I'll be the first one. He was my third choice out of the finalists. But J.D. Vance is doing a great job in the thick of things. He did three Sunday shows back to back to back. And none of these questions were, tell me, how does it feel to be your vice president? No, it is, what did you say 3 years ago on a podcast? What did Donald Trump say the other day about Kamala Harris's race? What about the threats to your wife? Listen to some of the sparring. Cut 14.
Trump seems to think that he's got a huge lead. I mean, you said this at the press conference. He suggested it could be a landslide looking at polls. Do you tell him that you need to kind of like temper expectations?
I think President Trump is extremely confident. Look, I'm extremely confident. I think we're going to win. I also think that we have to work as hard as possible.
Yeah. So that was it. And Jonathan Curl and Dana Bash got everything they wanted. I think they aired the whole thing, as well as CBS.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. We're going to go to a final simulcast on the number one TV network in the world, Fox News Channel. I was on there with Fox and Friends early this morning. We're going to join Harris Faulkner, the Faulkner Focus. Overwhelmingly successful show. Harris comes on here a lot. This is our chance to share audiences, so don't be alarmed. You could actually watch on Fox News. You can watch. You can get your app, hit watch, and just scroll over, and you can see it. You could see Fox News Radio, and then you can watch it on Fox Nation. So it's a lot of different things you could do, and hopefully you're in a family of affiliates. I find it when I'm traveling upstate, because I go to my daughter's soccer games, I go to visit her in college, I always hop on the app now because I keep going in and out of the affiliates. We're lucky to have some great affiliates upstate New York, including Albany, but a lot of times I just better off on the app because I keep going in and out of frequency. So you might want to do this. So I'll listen to Harris. Listen to her introduction of us.
His radio show, and we invite them to join us as we will now simulcast with his listeners. Let's go. President Biden is back at the White House after more days at the beach. We got a rare glimpse of him in a taped interview yesterday. And he confirmed suspicions about why he gave up his chance to be reelected. And he said it with a special name check.
What happened was a number of my Democratic colleagues in the House and Senate thought that I was going to hurt them in the races. And I was concerned if I stayed in the race, that would be the topic. You'd be interviewing about why did Nancy Pelosi say, why did someone? And I thought it'd be a real distraction, number one.
No denials from the former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi yet, if there will be any. Some love and some veiled but brutal honesty from her.
We have three generations of love for Joe Biden. I hope that that would sustain as we go forward. But the most important thing we have to do is to win the election, to sustain his legacy.
But she's not too old to run for office. She's also in her 80s. Brian, your take.
84. She's 84.
She is.
Yes. And I look at James Clyburn, too. And it's nothing against 80-year-olds. James Clyburn, I'm watching him walk. He looks like a track athlete. I look at Nancy Pelosi. Whatever you think of her, you don't think she can't do the job. I don't care if you agree with her or not. I have no problem with 80-year-olds. Joe Biden can't do the job. And Harris, we've noticed this for 3 years. I mean, if he didn't have that the pandemic, he would have been exposed early on, not been able to go and campaign like everyone else, getting 12 people at rallies. But now she acts like a hero, does the former speaker, because she stood up to him after the debate and behind the scenes stabbed him in the back, stabbed him in the front, and kicked him to the curb. What I wanted was a direct question. If you were the most successful president that you claimed to be, if the economy turned around like you did and you did this transformational legislation, why did your party want you out? You can't have it both ways. And number two is, how could you not be bitter against these people, these 70 people in the House, the 23 or 33 in the Senate that turned on you, led by Nancy Pelosi? What is your message to Nancy Pelosi today? We needed that question, and there's nothing to lose. He's out. And by the way, what terrible optics, sitting on the beach while Israel is 24 hours from maybe getting an attack by Iran, sitting on the beach while all these other issues need to be tackled directly. And he just goes out. I mean, this guy's like got another care in the world, plus the optics, people looking around the world, can't even watch the closing ceremony of the Olympics. I mean, is there something we could be doing a little bit more productive than that? He's got the rest of his life to sit on the beach.
Well, you know, you did kind of point to one thing, and that is that it appears he got pushed out from those atop the party, which if you're a Democrat voter, that's got to make you angry. Like, you voted for somebody in a primary and they handed you something else because four or five people behind the scenes thought it was a good idea and they pressured him. But the point of all that is, I don't think we're going to start to see him more at any of these events because he's talking now. And the more he talks and the more he fills us all in on how it really went down, that becomes a shiny object for the media. So I do understand the strategy and them trying to maybe keep him in the backyard, if not the basement. Former House Speaker Kevin McCarthy says a familiar Democrat powerhouse is secretly pulling the strings for the Harris campaign.
If you're watching the campaign now, some of Obama's, David Plouffe and others are now working on the campaign. You're getting the Obamas shifting from running the White House to now running this campaign.
President Obama's attorney general, his 2008 campaign manager, 2012 deputy campaign manager, all three of them hold positions on Kamala Harris's campaign. Brian.
So where's everybody else? So why are they in Wilmington to begin with? Because that's where Joe Biden had his headquarters. They go, everyone's going to keep their job. We're just going to put people above you. Harris, how would that fly in any organization? Even though they got 80 days to work together and you think it's a short time, these people got egos and they want to build off this in the future. They want to be David Axelrod and Van Jones with TV gigs and podcasts that are successful. You can't do that if you looked at it as a non-factor in the comeback of Kamala Harris. And back to our original point, and David Plouffe, by the way, is rattling a lot of people's fingers, a lot of people's cages. Jen O'Malley Dillon over the weekend called Kamala Harris and says, outline exactly what I'm supposed to be doing. Do you remember Kamala Harris ran such a bad organization? It imploded before Iowa, even though she had the most money. Remember, 87% of the people that worked for her on day one as vice president have left because she doesn't read her briefing papers and explodes on people, according to the former workers. And I'm going to add something else. If Joe Biden's policies were so great, if his presidency was so perfect, why doesn't Kamala Harris run on them? She's going to fix inflation on day one. She's going to enforce the border. Why all of a sudden? And now she's going to, I don't know, eliminate taxes on tips. Whose idea was that? Not Joe Biden's. I'm pretty sure she's not running on anything that they did for 3.5 years.
And Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, is now suddenly. And hey, it is great to deal with the homeless problem that they have in California. They lead the nation, particularly in San Francisco. But why now? Why couldn't he have also done that earlier? But that's Kamala's home state. So you got to clean that up. Let me get to this first. The left not letting up now. And you've heard a lot of this word, Brian. I'm sure your listeners, too. The word is weird, and they're using it against former President Trump and his running mate. Republicans are looking to flip the script on that using this awkward exchange between Minnesota Governor Tim Walz and his wife of 30 years. Here's J.D. Vance.
I think that it drives home how they're trying to distract from their own policy failures. I mean, look, this is fundamentally schoolyard bully stuff. I gave my big speech and I saw my wife and I gave her a big hug and a kiss because I love my wife and I think that's what a normal person does. Tim Walz gave his wife a nice firm Midwestern handshake and then tried to sort of awkwardly correct for it. They're name calling instead of actually telling the American people how they're going to make their lives better. I think that's weird.
Donald Trump Jr. posted this. It's totally normal to greet your wife with a firm handshake and a bro hug. Of course, Greg Gutfeld had a hot take.
Waltz extends his hand to his wife. She grabs it. They shake. He pulls her close and then goes in for that non-friction hug, all the while still shaking her hand. I wish there was a word to describe that. Oh, yeah, weird.
Tim Walz's over-the-top onstage antics at a Las Vegas rally this weekend also are raising some eyebrows. One critic said it was bizarre and, yes, weird. Brian.
I'm stunned by the whole weird thing. Number one, that it resonated to begin with. It makes me worried because I think in America, we like to be ourselves. I mean, doesn't this guy like to carve butter? Didn't we hear that? That's kind of weird. You know, isn't it kind of weird to be a moderate running for office as congressman and then become a wild lefty as a governor? Isn't it kind of weird to have a snitch line where you're supposed to report your neighbor? That's kind of weird. Isn't it weird to let a city burn to the ground for 3 days and then say, oops, sorry, I should have listened to my Democratic mayor? That's kind of weird. Isn't it kind of weird to put down the National Guard and say they're a bunch of 19-year-old cooks, they probably wouldn't have helped anyway? That's kind of weird, especially when you're in the National Guard. I also think that a lot of the musicians, a lot of creative people spend their whole lives being called so-called weird, and they hate it. And I just think that in America, if someone is not like you, I guess you could label them weird. But I thought in America, you try to have your kids grow up and be tolerant of everyone and say you have different likes, different dislikes, and you tolerate people. And you kind of get entertained by friends that are a little different than you. So I don't really look at Donald Trump weird and J.D. Vance weird, but Ron Howard's not doing a movie on my life. They didn't have my biography a bestseller for over 2 years. That didn't seem too weird to the American people. The J.D. Vance is not weird. You might not like him, but I don't know. If he is a little weird, embrace it. Don't vote for him, but don't mock him.
Well, there was so much there in what you said in that part when you talked about our children as a nation. Basically, being appreciated and loved for being different. That's the America I think we have.
Thought so.
Wow. I see why you have so many listeners.
Thank you, Harris.
You have a lot to say. And I'm glad you were here to simulcast with me, Brian. Thank you.
Yeah, I'll see you in the hall, Harris. Thanks so much for this.
That really is the only time we ever see each other.
Yes.
Thank you.
In the hall.
All right. Let's get to this. And this is a tough
one. All right. We have a minute on the other end. But I thought the weird thing would be away from now. I did not know they said it over the weekend. I must have missed that rally. But Donald Trump, in terms of his plans, he's going to be in North Carolina Wednesday for the economy. He's going to be Saturday in Pennsylvania. And tonight he's going to bind with On X. He's going to be live. What do they call it again, guys? What does X call their live? Is it?
It was Spaces. Is it still Spaces?
Oh, Spaces, yeah. That's what they tried to do with DeSantis. And it didn't really work. But I sense with Elon Musk on it today, researching it, making sure Iran doesn't infiltrate it, I think it'll get millions of people today. And it's going to be interesting because Elon Musk went to, I like Trump, to I'm all in on Trump. And my hope is today he gets Donald Trump focused on the issues because they're all in his side. He doesn't have to change anything. Just talk about the issues. Just talk about gender, race, or intellect. Just issues. And he'll win. Your choice.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
We hear these messages coming from the direction of Iran and Hezbollah. Whoever harms us in a way that has not been done in the past is likely to be hit in a way that hasn't been done in the past. The IDF has significant capabilities.
That is interesting. That's Yoav Gallant. He is the Israeli defense minister. That's a nice way of putting it. Try it. Go ahead, hit us. You're not going to believe how hard we're going to hit you. And I think everybody knows Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran, how great their intelligence is. Let's bring in Lieutenant General Keith Kellogg, knows the region quite well, former National Security Advisor to Vice President Pence, former Chief of Staff of National Security Council in the Trump administration. General, welcome back. Your thoughts? I mean, people say that Israel is preparing to get hit within 24 hours. Judging by our military maneuvers, we're bringing a nuclear sub into the area. It looks like we think so, too. What do you think?
Yeah, Brian, thanks for having me. Good to be with you again.
look, it's really interesting to watch. It's been 12 days since the Israelis hit him. And I think what you're seeing is a little bit of concern by the Supreme Leader on exactly what they want to do. In fact, the new president of Iran, Pezeshkian, kind of said, hey, maybe we don't want to do this. Now, the IRGC does want to do it. So you're kind of in that flux right now because they understand, I believe they understand quite clearly, that the Israelis will respond overwhelmingly. In fact, they call it, the term that was used, it really caught my eye. Gallant made the comment, the response if Iran hits them will be, quote, disproportionate. And that's a term for super escalation. And I think that's kind of put everybody a little bit on their heels. Now, saying that, if they do it, I think they're making a huge mistake. They could do something sort of like they did with us after we killed Soleimani. They came back with a pinprick attack, didn't kill anybody, kind of walk away from it, feel good about it, nothing. They can feel good about it and walk away. But if they hit the Israelis hard, I think you're going to see a significant response. And saying that, I think the United States is aware of that too, because you mentioned the comment about what we just put in there. You know, we just put in the USS Georgia. It's one of these four ballistic missile subs we have. It carries 150 Tomahawk land attack missiles, which are rather significant. Each one with a 1,000-pound warhead on it. And we move Raptors, our aircraft, U.S. Air Force Raptors, into the area. So we're kind of loading up. Now, saying that, there's a big difference between capability and credibility. You can have all the capability you want, but if they don't believe you have the credibility to deter, the will, they're going to go right ahead and do it. So this is when I think that the Supreme Leader of Iran is kind of caught betwixt one side and the other. And I'm not too sure what he wants to do. It'd be interesting to see. My point is, go ahead and let him do it. Gallant, you mentioned that about their Minister of Defense, Gallant. He basically said, bring it on. And I just think, boy, this is going to be, to use the term, to be hell to pay if they do it. I don't go against the Israelis anymore. Not at all.
General Kellogg, it seems as though Benjamin Netanyahu has put his foot on the gas. The assassinations are picking up. They took out that hospital site where they say 18 to 20 Hamas higher-ups were killed. Listen to what Kamala Harris said when asked in Phoenix, Arizona, cut 26.
You know, yet again, there are far too many civilians who have been killed. I mean, Israel has a right to go after the terrorists that are Hamas. But as I have said many, many times, they also have, I believe, an important responsibility to avoid civilian casualties.
Right. Is Hamas. Does he understand that they set up in hospitals, in mosques, and in schools? Could she have added that? And wouldn't that have gone a long way?
You know, Brian, it's really, and I hate to say this, but I'm going to be very candid with you. It's really a sophomoric approach to warfare. What she's really saying is, she doesn't understand what being a commander-in-chief is and what the responsibility is behind it. Look, first of all, the Israelis didn't start the war, okay? Hamas started that war. And when you get involved in a conflict, especially a conflict that is basically fighting in built-up areas, you're going to have collateral damage, which means, I hate to say it, civilians. But that's why most militaries never want to go to war, because they understand the consequences of that, which is a lot of civilian casualties. She doesn't quite get it. Here's what I was also preferred. She said, you know, Madam Vice President, you are aware there are still five Americans held hostage by Hamas.
Never brings it up.
You are aware they killed Americans, okay? You don't even mention that. I'm sorry. The good guys are not Hamas, and they get everything they deserve. And my point is, you should say, it's a very simple thing that a president or vice president should say. We stand behind the state of Israel and their fight against Hamas, Hezbollah, Iran, and the Houthis. Game over. That's all you need to say. And then back it up.
I know, but it shows daylight, and it shows if we hold out, we'll break America from Israel, especially if this vice president, who seems softer on terrorists than Joe Biden, if we can hold out. That gives them hope. I don't know why no one's really tied this together and said the anti-Semitism rises on the left. And I think even they're concerned about it, at least others are. So that's where we stand. And I just wonder, do you think as though this attack could happen in 24 hours? And do you worry more about what Iran can do or what Hezbollah can do?
Yeah, I worry more about what Iran could do in a large sense. But Hezbollah has got a missile capability that is significant. But if Hezbollah acts, Brian, then I think what you'll see is the Israelis go in, and it'll be the third Lebanon-Israeli war. They're going to clean house all the way up to the Litani River, which is about 15 miles into Lebanon, where a lot of the Hezbollah forces are, and they'll respond overwhelmingly back into Iran. And I would say to Iran, you do it, right, and your supreme leader's at risk, meaning dead. Your nuclear facilities at risk, meaning destroyed, and they're going to come after them. Do I think it's going to happen? I thought it was going to happen initially, but when you get into day 12, that means something's going on, and it's not because they're loading up. I think it's because they're really concerned about what's going to happen and going forward. That's the reason I'm saying I think I'm kind of like 50-50. If you do it, okay. If you're not going to do it, okay. I think I would have believed it would have happened earlier than 12 days ago. I mean, earlier than day 12. But if it happens, they expect a strong response. And I just say everybody sit back and let the Israelis go to work.
So I looked at the Wall Street Journal editorial section. We don't talk enough about how close Iran is to a nuclear bomb. And maybe by waiting, that they're within weeks, they say. David Albright, a weapons inspector, brings us back to the Iraq days, say that they're basically weaponizing, they're enriching their weapons-grade uranium for a bomb right now. They're basically at that level. The Israelis are not going to tolerate this. I never thought they would. So are we to expect, in some level, are they almost hoping there'll be some type of reprisal so they can go take out these facilities?
Yeah, I think, you know, when you look at the facilities they've got, Natanz and Fordo is probably a very deeply buried target to go after it. And the thing the Iranians really don't have yet is a good delivery device, meaning like a missile, because they haven't made it a missile with a warhead. That's really, you know, the reentry device is pretty hard. But I think the Israelis are going to go. The Israelis have, I think, made the decision they're going to have to do something really hard. And I think where they'd have to go after is Fordo, which is that's primarily their big facility. But, Brian, here's the problem with Fordo. It's a deep buried target. And the only ones who really, I think, have a real ability to do that is us. But it's also big. It's not something like a building. It's actually a tunnel complex. But knowing their intelligence, they probably have a pretty good read on it. But this is one of those we in the United States, because we've said the same thing, Brian. We've said we will not tolerate Iran having a nuclear weapon. But all we do is talk about it. We should have just very clearly defined what we'll end up doing if they develop a nuclear weapon. And I think they've got enough enriched uranium. They can start making them. And once they get them, I tell you, Brian, my experience being in the White House, you treat a nuclear power differently than you treat a non-nuclear power.
Hence North Korea.
Because of damages.
Yep. Yeah. I want to reiterate Ukraine. Ukraine now controls 28 border settlements inside Russia in the Kursk region. They got about 1,000 guys 300 miles in. What changes now?
Yeah, boy, I tell you, that's the one that we should be paying attention to, because this is rather significant. It was a gutty move by Ukraine to go on the offense there. They're heading towards a place in an arranged place called Kursk, which is amazingly, that was the turning point of World War II between the Germans and the Russians at the big battle of Kursk, where after that battle, the Russians were on the defense and the Germans were on the defense, the Russians were on the offense. I think it's a smart move. It's a gutty move to do it. It's more than 1,000, Brian. You're talking thousands with a plural.
Thousands of Ukrainian fighters are inside Russia?
Yeah, it's not just 1,000. Wow. I think they've got a few brigades in there, and I think they plan on holding it. What you've got in the military is called a raid. If a raid goes in, you go in, you hit, you come right back out. This is not a raid. They're going in there for the long haul, and I think they've occupied territory. And it was a gutty move on their part, and now they can kind of defend what they've got, and I think they're going to try to expand that what we used to call an airhead, a position of lodgment that they've got. And it's going to be interesting to watch. It's put Putin on the back foot, because now he's going to have to shift forces.
Yes.
He's going to have to shift forces from the vicinity of Kharkiv or the Donbass region. And it's a real problem now, because once you start moving, then it opens up your vulnerability. Here's what's actually happened. It's very simply. They've been fighting a war of attrition, the Russians against the Ukrainians. And that advantage goes to Russia. They are now in a war of maneuver. And that advantage now goes to Ukraine. So this is going to be one of those armchair theorists, it's going to be enjoyable to watch, because this is a real dynamic. It's a real change of operation. And I give a lot of credit to Ukrainians. It was a gutty move. It was a powerful move. And it's going to put a lot of pressure on Putin. He has to react to that. If he doesn't react to it, the Ukrainians are going to continue to march forward, move forward, move forward, and they're going to occupy a lot more land than the Russians want them to.
General, you do this for a living, but if you ever want to get to peace, the Ukrainians aren't going to do it from a defensive posture. They have to get the Russia concerned. Mm. And they were concerned after the initial failure of taking Kyiv. And then they battled back when they withheld the surge. And now they've got to be concerned again. So if anybody wants both sides to start talking peace, the only way to get the Russians to the table is get them worried. Do you think they're worried?
I think what you've got, when I say worried, I think there's a concern that Putin has now got. You know, Gerasimov is senior general. It's interesting. He's really a defensive specialist. When you look at all his writings, he's not an offensive guy. And Sirsky, the guy that is the Ukrainian senior military guy, is a pretty smart guy. He's an offensive guy, a mighty guy, a maneuver kind of guy. But you're absolutely right. By them taking territory, now starts to change the dynamic. And as you get closer to it, then you got to say, hey, look, we're going to take territory, because if you want to have your territory back, you're going to give our territory back. It was a smart move. It was a gutty move. It was a bold move. Yeah. It was a smart move.
And hopefully the F-16s will help. It's not going to be the balance. It's not going to change the war, but it'll definitely help. And they finally arrived from another country with our permission. We evidently have trained some pilots. I haven't seen them yet, but hopefully they're in action. General, thanks so much. A very tenuous time in the world right now. Thanks for breaking it down.
Thanks, Brian. Thanks for having me.
Hey, when we come back, we're going to go out to Oklahoma. Then we're going to go out to Utica. We're going to take some phone calls. Also, find out what you're writing me at briankilmeade.com. Keep in mind, I'm going to be in Peekskill October 20th, Peekskill, New York. It's going to be great. Got 1,000 seats to fill, so let's do it. Also, tonight, I am going to be on the 5, so I'll see you there.
Learning something new every day on the Brian Kilmeade Show. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
We all watched the television coverage of just yesterday. That's on top of everything else that we know and don't know yet. Based on what we've just been able to see, and because we've seen it or not, doesn't mean it hasn't happened.
That is, well, I mean, I read chapter 14 of Charlie Spearing's book over the weekend. I text these guys. And I just said, you have to read this chapter. It's called Word Salad. There are so many that I never heard or forgot that we don't, and we have a lot, right? I mean, I don't even know what that was from.
We do also need to focus on what is happening now toward what is possible and should be possible the day after, as we call it.
This is what we're going to look forward to? Are you serious? This is a woman off script that doesn't know what she's doing. It's like every day she got caught having to give a verbal presentation for a book she didn't read. Louie, listening in Oklahoma on KRMG. Hey, Louie.
How you doing, Brian? I just have a couple things that have been bothering me lately, and I
okay.
just want to know help bring them to light. Trump has always repeated that, you know, all these illegal immigrants are coming across the border and taking jobs. But what he doesn't do is he doesn't explain to the American people what jobs are being taken. I can tell you, I just remodeled my home, and 90% of those people did not speak English. So we're looking at plumbers, electricians, framers, tile workers, auto workers, all those labor-intense jobs, you know, that people build businesses off of. People will do this for 4 or 5 years working for a company, and then they'll turn into an entrepreneur and start a business.
Yep.
These people make anywhere from $85 to $125 an hour. These are the jobs that are being taken. And I wish people would understand. It's not, you know, people coming in and taking lawyers and you know, CEO jobs and all the rest of that stuff. That's not what's going on. It's the common day work that we would get, you know, us that did trades all through our lives. And I think that's what's really missing.
I think you're right, Louis. You're 100% correct. And I was talking to a plumber the other day, and I just said, your business must be great because I hear we have no plumbers. He goes, not really. I go, why? He goes, because you have these illegal immigrants come in and say, I'll pay, if you pay me cash, I'll do it at a third of what he charges. He goes, I can't do that. I have to have insurance. I have to hire people. They got to be bonded. They need social security numbers. But it's people are strung out and need watching every dollar. So they're willing to maybe put their values aside and hire that guy, right?
Exactly. And this is what really needs to be brought out. I want people to understand that if the common person like you and I who have worked through our living and try to get somewhere, and these are the jobs that are being taken. It's not people trying to get into college and all the rest of it.
Right.
So that's my
Louis, good point. Thank you for the real life story, which is the immigration problem. Terry in Utica, New York. Hey, Terry.
Hi, good morning, Brian. I'm a solid 87-year-old Tufter, and let me tell you something. What he has to do, I'm going to give him some advice. What he has to do is don't mention personal things, don't mention race, don't say she's stupid, because she's not being stupid. When he does that, he's getting stunned. But what he has to do is stick to the issues, and he will win hands down.
Because he's right on the issues, Terry. He doesn't have to change any of his positions. He's right.
Absolutely.
Trump.
Absolutely, 100%.
Yeah. And you want proof, Terry? She's taking his issues. She now wants to be strong on the border and pretending as she is. She's from a sanctuary state that gives everybody free room, free board, free education. And she goes, I cracked down on transnational gangs. You did not. Maybe there's a few lawyers or attorneys that were under you that did something, but you were in a permissive state, come one, come all, that's still doing that today. Alex in Brooklyn. Hey, Alex.
Hey, good morning, Brian. Thanks for taking the call. You know, I think with the no tax and tip thing that Kamala Harris is doing, I think it's not wrong if she takes a policy that works for the American people, and that's why she's, you know, even if it's Trump's idea. But the thing is, why isn't she taking all the policies of Trump for the American people's benefits? Because it doesn't align with their agenda. She's not going to shut down the border. They need the illegal migrants for the votes. That's what they're hoping for. This is the no tax and tips is the only thing that aligns with their agenda somewhat, even though in the past she voted on having, you know, giving access to the IRS to be able to crack down on people that get tips that don't pay their taxes
yeah.
so well. She was never in favor of that. But it's just because it aligns with her agenda, and she sees that the American people are very happy.
So,
about
Alex, what you're saying is don't – yeah, she could say it, but she's not going to do it. And watch. She's going to say no longer to Social Security people getting Social Security pay taxes too. That's Trump's other thing. So she'll take that too without acknowledging it. I mean, just flat-out stealing. What does that say about your character? You guys are smart. Thanks so much. I'll see you on the 5 tonight. Go to BrianKilmeade.com. I want to see you in Peekskill October 20th.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network, subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.